Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More now on all this terrorism and detainee news this morning. The plot in the Bronx, the president's speech, and the announcement that the first regular federal court trial for a Gitmo detainee will take place here in New York. Here is Assistant FBI Director Joe Demarest on the evidence seized from the four suspects in the alleged Bronx plot.
They have bags that were set up, they believe to be bombs, carrying about 30 pounds of explosives, what they believe to be explosives. Here we had vehicles staged by us, by the Joint Terrorism Task Force. They would place a satchel or a bag in a vehicle in front of the temple down the block, and then two more bags into a vehicle parked in front of the synagogue here.
Assistant Director of the FBI, Joe Demarest. Motive, Police Commissioner Ray Kelly.
More information about the motive, I'm sure, will be developed as the case progresses. But right now, that was stated they wanted to commit jihad. They were disturbed about what was happening in Afghanistan and Pakistan, that Muslims were being killed. They all made the statement that they didn't, if Jews were killed in this attack, it wouldn't, that would be all right.
Let's get the latest now from Sewell Chan, the New York Times City Room blog bureau chief, and James Gordon Meek, Daily News correspondent covering the story. James, Sewell, thanks for coming on this morning. Hello.
Good morning.
How far did this alleged plot against two Bronx synagogues and Air National Guard aircraft get, James? How clear is that at this point? How far did it get? Sewell, can you answer that question?
Sure. It depends what you mean by how far. I mean, on one level, the plot was disrupted, the authorities are saying, last night after the suspects planted these IEDs or homemade bombs at the two vehicles outside the two Bronx synagogues. But of course, as we now know, the bombs would never really have gone off. The explosive material wasn't, it was inert, it wasn't active, nothing could have actually been detonated. But the authorities evidently waited until, this stage to crack the case and to make these arrests in order to, presumably, to, advance their conspiracy charges.
Sewell, I'm sure you know that other such terror plots have turned out to be less than met the eye when they got fully fleshed out. Lackawanna, maybe Fort Dix, some other things, just violent gleams in some inept people's eyes. Is there solid reason to think this is in a different category?
That's really going to be for the courts to decide. I think it's interesting to note that, these individuals do not seem to have been the most sophisticated people on earth. Ray Kelly, the police commissioner, called them petty criminals. The alleged ringleader, James Cromedy, had a pretty extensive criminal history, maybe 27 arrests, the police commissioner said, but not for things that were really that serious. There's really no evidence right now that these guys had any links to outside terrorist networks or even, broader organizational capacity here in the United States.
James Gordon Meek from the Daily News. We had a problem with your line. Can you hear me now?
I can definitely hear you. Can you hear me?
I sure can, James.
Fantastic.
Thanks. Now, will it be a question how much entrapment there was? An eager informant, and this was a bus driven by an informant, could find some angry guys and then offer to sell them weapons, propose the synagogue as targets. These things happen. Any reason to believe it did or did not happen in this case?
Well, the question of FBI informants has been raised in a lot of these so-called homegrown terrorism plots. As you point out, that often get hyped by officials as being, the next 9/11 or 9/11 in the making. We've seen that thrown around, like with the JFK airport plot a couple of years ago. And then when you get into court, you see that these guys are pretty pathetic. They may have had some motivation, but they really didn't have the means until the FBI stepped in and started to provide ideas for terrorist plots. But in some cases, like in the Miami plot with some mostly Haitian guys and Haitian Americans a couple of years ago, they were going to bomb the Sears Tower, and these guys were so pathetic in terms of their means that they were asking for this FBI informant for combat boots. So it's too early to tell yet with these guys. I mean, this was a little different because they got as far as actually planting the fake bomb in front of the target. But they were aiming much lower than, for example, the Miami guys who wanted to take down a skyscraper. These guys were looking to take down the temple in Bronx, obviously, and that's no small thing, no small matter, but it's not a skyscraper. But it's hard to say how this will play out in court, but I wouldn't be surprised if the role of the informant becomes a very key issue as negotiations and hearings begin.
Two Bronx synagogues, I think they were on 236th Street and 247th Street, Independence Avenue in Riverdale, for those who know the Riverdale area. And Sewell, do you know more about the actual devices? Did the informant fool these guys into thinking these were real bombs when they were really fake bombs?
Well, that apparently was the case for both the IEDs, the homemade bombs, and also for the Stinger surface-to-air anti-aircraft missile.
They already obtain something that they thought was a surface-to-air anti-aircraft missile that they were planning to fire, allegedly, at aircraft taking off from the Newburgh Air National Guard facility?
Well, yeah, it seems the informant gave them, I mean, James, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems the informant gave them that, but again, that was also not activated. So it really was the apparatus for a Stinger anti-aircraft missile, but if you had fired it at an airplane, or if these guys had fired it, it would not actually have gone off.
It was inert, and that's actually similar to a plot, I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago, where there was an arms dealer who was trying to sell a different type of surface-to-air missile to some supposed terrorists who wanted to do another 9/11 to shoot down airplanes in New York. And the only thing real in the entire case was the actual arms dealer who was trying to buy the weapons. The people who were going to buy the weapons from him, the terrorists, were fake. The seller of the missiles were fake. They actually imported a fake, inert, you know, missile into New York, so it would look to this guy like this was really happening. But so they've done this particular type of sting, they've done it before.
There's an informant in this case, as we've been discussing, and the person has reportedly worked for the FBI for 6 years. I don't know if you've heard that stat, too. Do we know how this person, this informant, discovered the suspects? Have they revealed any of that yet?
The complaint says that the informant met Cromedy, who's alleged to be the ringleader, last June, if I'm not mistaken. It doesn't say how the informant was recruited by the FBI or sort of what the tactics were.
So we know that they were from that Newburgh area, right, up where the Stewart Air Force Base is?
That's where they were living at the time, although I think Cromedy has roots in Brooklyn.
I see. Law enforcement let this get... Well, go ahead. What were you going
to
say?
But, yeah, just to add, I'm looking at it right now. The informant apparently met Cromedy last June at Masjid al-Ikhlas, a mosque in Newburgh, and that's when Cromedy told the informant about the fact that his parents had lived in Afghanistan and that he was upset about the killings of Afghanistan and Pakistan residents by U.S. military there.
This raises an interesting element about how the FBI gets informants and their relationship with mosques in New York City and around the country. And there's been a lot of we've seen over the years a lot of consternation on the behalf of from the Muslim community, Muslim American community, about FBI surveillance and this and that. But the FBI has also had a very aggressive outreach effort. They have agents who go into mosques and give speeches on counterterrorism, talk to people. It's on the one hand, it's a public relations thing. It's a diplomatic overture to the community, but it also is a way in for these counterterrorism officials at the FBI who meet people who end up diming out people who are angry, like these guys allegedly are, and thinking of committing mayhem.
So do all Muslims have reason to believe there are FBI informants posing as parishioners infiltrating their mosques?
Well, I think it's more of a case where the FBI makes this outreach at times. I mean, the FBI develops informants like all folks in law enforcement do, but they also do these outreach things that are let's talk kind of conversations, and as I say, speeches. And through that process, I think that people, they hand out their business cards and people become aware that look, we're not trying to persecute Muslims, but if you hear of something, and they pick up the phone and they make a call. And they're called walk-ins sometimes. I don't know if this informant is a walk-in, as they call them. but may well be. And that is not an uncommon thing.
You know, relevant to the president's speech that we carried earlier and the controversial policies of the Bush administration and how the Obama team is going to carry some of them forward, but in different ways and some of them not. I've already heard some commentators this morning say these arrests vindicate the Bush administration's controversial anti-terror tactics because people really are out to get us. But, Sewell, did this investigation use either extreme interrogation techniques or warrantless wiretapping, as far as we know?
I don't see any evidence for either. I mean, I don't think any, you know, interrogation or questioning of these guys has even begun. I don't know as much about the wiretapping issue, but the complaint suggests that these guys were monitored in terms of the house in Newburgh that they were using to plan this stuff, using conventional video and audio surveillance. There's no evidence to me that that was done without a warrant.
And let's be clear here, just so everybody's clear on this one. According to senior FBI and law enforcement officials, there is absolutely no connection between these suspects who were arrested yesterday and Al-Qaeda or any foreign terror organization, or in fact, any organization whatsoever. These guys are on their own little, if you want to call it a cell, but they are not connected to any organized terrorism network.
Law enforcement let this get pretty far. James, is that a change in tactic? And if so, why? I mean, they got as far as planting, we are told, what they thought were explosives in front of these two synagogues in the Bronx.
You know what it might be is a change in legal tactics, because in the past, when we've had similar cases, such as I mentioned Miami and in Lodi, California, where they get somebody and you know, really when it all boils down to, it's just somebody talking and saying, I want to go blow something up. And the informant or the undercover FBI agents are providing the fake bomb, the fake missile, as in this case in New York last night. That ends up being attacked in court and in the court of public opinion, where people saying, hey, you know, these guys weren't really all that serious. Journalists like me also often criticize that. So in this case, I think what they may have been trying to do, I suspect, what makes this case unique, certainly, is that even though the bomb was fake, the missiles were fake, everything was, there was no danger to anybody, they let them go ahead and commit the act of terrorism. In other words, they were intending that bomb was real, they were going to put it in the car, and they were going to blow it up and kill people at that temple. But there was no danger because it was all, as I think Commissioner Kelly said, all tightly controlled. And I think that was true. But when they get to court, it's going to be a much higher burden for the defense lawyers to say, hey, you know, these guys were just talking. Now they've got an overt act, which I bet they videotaped the whole thing, the FBI. And they can say, look, they planted the bomb. They thought it was a real plastic explosives, and they put it in a car. They planted three satchels.
James Gordon Meek from the Daily News, Sewell Chan from the New York Times. We heard President Obama's address on detainees and terrorism prevention. We talked to Carol Rosenberg from the Miami Herald and Michael Ratner from the Center for Constitutional Rights. And now we'll open up the phones. When we continue in a minute, your reactions to any of this morning at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You can keep posting to our comments page, but now we'll take the phone calls. Your reaction to all this news this morning, the plot in the Bronx, the president's speech, the announcement that the first regular federal court trial for a Gitmo detainee will take place here in New York, 212-433-9692.